Federal News Radio's Causey Awards honor top achievers in federal human resources. It's named after our own Mike Causey, in tribute to his career spent reporting on issues that matter to the federal workforce. In fact, Mike's still at it, day in, day out. This year, judges have selected four winners. One of them is Will Levy. He's the Associate Director for Management and Chief Information Officer at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. He tells us how he tackled the problems with employee engagement at the Bureau.
When I first came to the BEP, I was in charge of security, so I wasn't in this role. So I wasn't in it, the executive team at the time. And we had a pretty good sense, based on the scores, that our employees weren't too satisfied with leadership and the BEP in general. And over time, that got the attention of the executive group, and they decided that, hey, we need to take some measures to try and, you know, fix this thing. And we had high levels of distrust up and down the chain, and employees and unions, the whole bit. So we just decided we were going to tackle it, and we carved out a plan and an approach and moved forward over time.
Is part of the issue at a place like the Bureau of Engraving and Printing that you have production people, union line workers, operating machinery and so forth, and then you've got a policy and management function. And at a lot of agencies, the FAA is another one that's like that. Sometimes there's a little bit of not quite seeing eye to eye among those two general large groups.
Yeah, that's certainly true. You know, we have a heavy blue-collar representation in our workforce, and so there is a built-in tension there between, you know, what management is doing on one end to try and lead the thing and what the manufacturing responsibilities of the organization are. And the employees don't always, you know, feel that, you know, we're making the right decisions based on the core mission of the organization. And at the same time, you know, we have to be careful to represent the full group of employees, not just the union employees. So there's definitely a tension there.
You know, one thing we shouldn't leave out of this is the fact that it's what they do at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. And what they do is make money. And I was there a couple of months ago on a tour, just a walk-off-the-street tour. Absolutely fascinating. I bought a sheet of $2 bills. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but I bought
them. What'd you pay
for? $8. No, they do make a profit. They make a big profit on the money. But it's absolutely fascinating to see these $100 bills rolling off the thing. And I think the $2 bills, I think they said they print them every 4 years, I believe. So it's not a regular process. But there was a guy, I was looking down into the printing facility, and there was a guy who had a hand-lettered sign, and it said, "I just made more money in a half an hour than I'll make in my lifetime. How do you think I feel?" But a really neat place to go to.
All right, so just a piece of background. Give us a sense of the scope in terms of numbers of employees you have to deal with, and what were they telling you in terms of their sense of engagement and morale?
Well, there's about 2,000 employees, give or take. You know, we vacillate between 1,800 and 1,900 employees, so we'll call it 2,000. And at the time that we hit rock bottom, we were about 219 on the survey for the federal employee.
Out of about 220.
Survey. Yeah, at the time, out of about that many. I think it was 225. We're a little better than 220. And significant issues with leadership. Like I said before, they felt communication wasn't as good as it could have been. That we weren't listening to the employees, we weren't taking action on some of the things they wanted us to do. So I think across the gamut, we had challenges. So I don't think there was any real sweet spot that we could say, okay, we're doing good in this area. We had challenges everywhere.
So how did you decide what to tackle first?
Well, what we did was we brought a contractor in, we hired a consultant to come in and conduct focus groups. And so we brought in people from across our organizations. Unions were heavily involved in that plan. And we asked them a series of questions about, you know, what were some of the issues that they saw at the BEP? Because management had made moves from like 2006 to 2010, but the employees didn't feel like those were the right things. Management had decided those, so we wanted to hear the voice of the employee. They came up with a couple hundred recommendations that then we synthesized into some themes that were common amongst what they were saying. And then we formulated an action plan, you know, based on that. And it was a multi-year effort that we said we were going to set in place to try and tackle some of the things that they saw. We did some immediate things, low-hanging fruit, if you will, that they said, hey, if you fix this, you know, we'll feel immediately better.
So what were some of those? Because I think maybe a lot of agency managers would want to know, give me some quick fixes.
Well, like, some of the quick fixes, you know, when we talk to other agencies and we share them, as I look at them, I'm like, wow, it doesn't sound that important. But again, you got to remember they felt they were important. Like our cafeteria food, for one, they felt was not very well. And we've improved greatly. We have this chef that is top of the line now, and he creates all kinds of great meals, and people are happy to be able to have some place to go in and eat.
That definitely affects morale. You want a good meal, of course.
Absolutely. And we were pretty restrictive workforce as far as coming and going, telework, alternate work schedules, the flexibilities that you read about, they didn't really exist a whole lot in the BEP. And we hired a work-life coordinator, Kristen, to come in and, you know, try and push some of those things in our organization. So if you look at us today, aside from the production folks who have to, you know, pretty much be on the press doing the job, the rest of the organization has far more liberal work practices than they did before. And so that's another huge thing for the organization.
And so moving up the hierarchy of issues from the cafeteria, what were some of the more tough ones that you had to get after?
After we finished the focus groups, one of the key things that the focus group said to us was you have to tackle the issue of accountability. In their minds, in their eyes, we had issues with accountability from top to bottom. So things would go wrong, and there wouldn't necessarily be someone held accountable to make improvements. And they said, you can do all these other 200 things we're telling you about, but if you don't fix accountability, nothing's really going to change. And that was tough, because we had that information by, I would say, the end of 2010, and it took us another year or so to really formulate a set of actions around accountability. And we came up with a program called Aim for Yes that was a game changer for us, because it focused on customer service between each other and to the external customer, and we defined accountability for the BEP, what it looked like and how you would know it was occurring. And then we met with all our employees and we shared that information.
We're speaking with Will Levy. He is the Associate Director of Management and the Chief Information Officer at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and he is a Causey Award winner. Now, while this is happening, you are the point person for this. Tell me about the relationship that you formed with the rest of the employees and what they began to see you as.
Well, we had a core group of about 8 to 10 of us that had volunteered to be on what we called Best Places to Work team. And we had to, you know, sell our program to the leadership as we went, right? And so we held a roadshow, is what we called it, where we got in front of all the employees as a group, and we began to lay forth what we saw as the problem and what we were going to do about it. And then we came back with a second roadshow with our Aim for Yes program, Be Great program, accountability definitions, world-class definitions, the meat of the program. And so by then, I think they started to see all of us as representatives of, you know, change and what was going to happen to move the BEP forward. Initially, they thought we were kind of just mouthpieces saying, hey, we're going to change some things. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But after we stuck to it for a while, I think they started to believe that we really believed in what we were saying.
Well, you know, I suspect a lot of people, when you said you fixed the cafeteria, maybe had a smile and sort of thought this was simplistic, but it's important to know where the Bureau of Engraving and Printing is. It's on 14th Street in D.C. The next stop is Virginia. The Holocaust Museum is on the same block, but there's nothing there. I mean, there are no restaurants. There may be food trucks now, things like that, but there was nothing there. And the idea of getting a decent meal in a very short period of time, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, I don't know what the lunch hour is there, but that is really going to the core of the matter.
Lunch hour is probably about $1 billion worth these days.
Absolutely.
But I want to get back to that question of accountability, because if you're a pressman or someone, you know, in the shop, that means one thing. If you are the CIO or the CFO, it means something else. So how did you determine the definition of accountability that was appropriate for each level and function?
I don't necessarily think that it changes. I think each of us has a set of duties and responsibilities that's been set in front of us for our particular job. And so accountability is for us to do those things that we've been charged with. Doesn't matter how high an organization or how low an organization, we're counting on you to get that right. And so, you know, we revamped our performance management system to have individual goals that would drive performance more on an individual level so that I would know what I'm accountable for. And, you know, that was a piece of, you know, what we did. But when we took forth the definition, what we basically said is, if you don't see change, then someone's not being held accountable. We called that visible change, because if I coach you, if I counsel you, if I retrain you, if I give you the tools you need to be more effective at whatever it is you do, then we should see change. If we don't, then we should see you gone eventually. But one way or another, it should be visible to those people who are desiring to see people held accountable. So that's a big piece of what we sold.
What's the next hurdle that you're going to tackle in this realm?
Well, you know, we've always said it wasn't about any scores. We said that from day one. And when we hit number 47 last year, we didn't celebrate that. You know, it was good. We were happy. But there's still a journey that we're on. And so we always said it's a long-term journey. So we have a group today called the Deputy Director Circle. And so our deputy director has pulled together a group of people. We had what we called advocates back in 2011. We never could figure out quite how to use them. And then we had a consultant giving us some training on engagement, and he talked about this thing called the core cadre of the committed. And we said, yeah, that's what we want. So the deputy director sponsored this group, and we had applications, and we picked 10 of the best. And now they have just went through and interviewed every single person in the organization personally, unless they just were unwilling to be talked to. So they're repeating, you know, our work of 2010 when we did the focus groups, but on a personal level. And now they're going to synthesize their findings, and we're going to be able to see what the challenges are today in everybody's mind and kind of compare the two and then formulate our next strategies from that.